This podcast is for investment professionals only. The value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Good day, everyone, and welcome to the U.S. Lens. I'm Ron Insana, Senior Advisor to Schroders, as we take a look this week at opportunity sets that exist both in the U.S. markets and around the world, given all the news we've seen now in the last couple of weeks, from three vaccines for the coronavirus to what appears to be a near resolution to the U.S. presidential election. Joining me now to discuss all that is Daniel Woodbridge. He is Senior Portfolio Manager at the QEP team, joining us today from London. Let me just start with your big picture. I mean, you've made some predictions earlier in the year about where we were going with respect to rotational aspects of the market. And we've seen some of that take place, big to small, growth to value, U.S. to international. We're given all the news that we've had of late, where do you find markets right now?
I think when we last spoke, we were talking, as it turned out in hindsight, to be at a seminal moment in markets, which was the stretch, the elastic between growth and value, was at an extreme low, a decade low. We're looking at 60% discounts for value to growth. And we were looking at, as a consequence, some record discounts to the international equities and the US, which has obviously had some far more successful growth companies, which had extreme concentration. Since then, there has been a well-publicized factor quake, a near record-breaking factor quake. Some market observers have commented that it could be as much as 10 standard deviations, which I think, if anything, just highlights that black swans are hard to measure and come along more than we anticipate. So that record elastic that we felt would need to come in has, I wouldn't say snapped, but it certainly had a snap back. So I think that leaves us, I still wouldn't say that leaves us in equilibrium, but I think it leaves us in a slightly more balanced place than we were. And I think the volatility and size of that factor quake has got people thinking about their portfolios, about their factor exposure, about what the outlook is from both a fundamental and factor perspective into next year.
Yeah, I mean, from a mechanical perspective, I mean, it's a fairly easy call to say that one should rebalance in the direction of value, one should rebalance in the direction of small, one should rebalance in the direction of international, given the degree to which the former were overweighted in a portfolio. Is this a trade? Is it a mechanical trade? Or is it more of an investment theme going forward?
I think probably as ever, it is hard to have totally clear-cut views because all of these aspects overlap. So, you know, what aspect of value rallied the most and which aspect will carry on to rally? We know that some people might characterize the recent rally as being more exposed to low quality insofar as it was very cyclical sectors that suffered from corona, such as the airlines and the travel industry, that rallied the most. Again, in terms of smaller companies, there can be a flavor there. The smaller companies will hopefully become bigger ones. The bigger ones possibly start to face headwinds, as we see with Biden coming in and some of the antitrust and regulatory rhetoric picking up. And again, I think you can't disconnect it from what's going on in geopolitics. So international is not an amorphous blob, so to speak. It was anticipated that Biden would soften, potentially look to soften relations with China, if indeed he does go from being president-elect to president, which is looking highly likely. So I think I would say there's a chance to all of those. But that said, in the round, you can see catalysts for why they would continue.
I'll tell you, after 3 weeks of the election wrangling in the United States, it makes me long for the days of parliamentary democracy. But that aside, how much of a factor quake is the Biden election insofar as we're still in the United States in particular, obviously waiting on fiscal relief and stimulus? We're waiting on, obviously, confirmation of the election. We're waiting on, again, how the Biden administration deals with China. Some view it as maybe a more multilateral approach to Chinese transgressions, if you will, on both the economic and military front. How important is that going forward?
I think it's an unusual moment, wasn't it? Because in a way, the markets responded to the known knowns. I mean, we've known since a few days after the coronavirus was first detected and the Chinese released the protein sequence in March, that a vaccine was an almost inevitability. It's not like it was a surprise. The leading contenders had all kept the market well abreast of their phase one, their phase two, their safety data, their efficacy. The scientists were confident. The US election went according to the probability and the odds and also wasn't a surprise. And the big turn in the factor, it started a few days before the election and the big turn happened on the Pfizer news. So to a certain extent, I think it was a classic case of what was in the price. You know, this elastic got sufficiently stretched that these were inevitable known straws that broke the camel's back, as opposed to a revelation, unlike the coronavirus, which essentially did come out of the blue. What it means going forward, I guess, is a case of time frames. As you've said at the start, we still do have to navigate this winter, where in the US, particularly sadly, cases have continued to rise very fast, as they have in Europe. And over the weekend, we've seen some incidents, I believe, picking up again in China and Korea. So I could imagine the next few months will be a difficult and a choppy environment whilst the market decides between how it approaches the very, very present, we're getting through this winter, but the known likely stimulus and approach to international trade that is going to come in the spring onwards.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, you're listening to the Investor Download.
So with respect to central banks, then, in the absence of immediate relief, we've seen the European Central Bank, the Bank of England, and even the Federal Reserve promise to do things that will, in fact, support the economy. How much of will that influence markets? How much of that will continue to depress yields? And what does that mean with yields as low as they are for other risk assets like equities, for instance?
Yeah, I mean, the depressed yield environment is a continuation in Europe, albeit it's being exasperated even further, of the TINA acronym we've come to know so well over the last decade. And again, I guess that talks to how these factors can't be isolated from each other. So in the last couple of weeks, the value factor has been the best performing factor. The next best performing factor has been dividend yield. And as we know, dividend yield and mature businesses paying out their cash flows, which are often in the value area of the market, are closely correlated. So I think there could be a case to be said that actually after a snapback in the extreme of growth and value, what areas of value might continue to perform after the initial snapback? I could see that quality could come back into it over the medium to long term. And I could see covered dividend yield or quality adjusted dividend yield also performing well next year, as in a TINA environment, that covered dividend may prove attractive. And I also think as these central banks announce their remedies, they're also beginning to have the first little peek into what the true cost this is going to be. So our own Chancellor Exchequer here in UK, Rishi Sunak, has been articulating more and more in the last few weeks that this furlough schemes, this stimulus, it comes at a cost. And we're beginning to, as we turn the edge of confidence, we're also beginning to look at the payback in terms of potentially an increase in CGT, maybe even looking at some methods around income tax. So that's another reason why quality yield could do well in the medium term view, because you're going to have growth and a cyclical snapback in terms of GDP, but at the same time, you're going to have a realization that there's a cost that's going to be associated with this, an increased taxes, which may hold back the consumer cash flow a little bit relative to the snapback in GDP.
All right, first, just very quickly, CGT that you mentioned, what does that mean?
Sorry, apologies, capital gains tax.
Oh, okay. Thanks. Yeah. All right. Now, getting back to covered yield. So, again, probably here in the States, we refer to that a little differently. Is that looking at corporations that have fortress balance sheets that can afford to pay out their dividends on a consistent basis without any concerns that economic or industry factors might force them to cut or eliminate the dividend?
Correct. Yeah.
So having said that, then, I mean, it's been a long time, a very long time, since anyone's looked at a dividend discount model to determine which stocks are attractive. Are we going to have to go back to kind of scratching that out on paper and figuring out which companies are safe in that regard?
I think that was certainly an exercise the market briefly went through in March, where there was a concern for balance sheets for obvious reasons in certain sectors who we knew were facing an imminent 2-3 quarter threat to their revenues, may turn out to be 4-5 quarters or even a couple of years for some aspects of travel to fully recover. Yeah. Some people would say it's never going to fully recover. Business travel may be permanently impaired, but that would say tie in more to an ESG thematic than necessarily a corona thematic. It's not that good for the world to keep traveling. We may have to dust these things off. Yeah, I think we're probably looking at a more balanced market. We've come from a market from some incredible extremes in terms of factors, and a more balanced market, I think, would reward covered yield. I think it would reward quality and value a bit more than it has. And I think that will come slightly at the cost of these growth stocks. But as we've discussed before, many of these are phenomenal businesses. Some of these are phenomenal businesses where there is now a lot in the price. And when we look at some of the implied growth for the growthier end of the market, it would seem to have overshot. And the pullback in it was not that dramatic. It wasn't actually that much more in the first couple of weeks of November than we saw post the Tesla and Apple splits in the first couple of weeks of September. So I would say this part of the market is definitely not a car crash waiting to happen. So it's reasonably resilient because they're reasonably good business models. But I just think there'll be some diversification and rebalancing of some of the areas which have been left behind.
My final question, we're going into the holiday season, both here and abroad. And while we see the light at the end of the tunnel now with 3 vaccines, and I'll borrow an expression from your side of the pond, will this be a winter of discontent for investors?
I think there's opportunities beneath the surface for this equilibrium trade through the winter. I think if people are going to, or if the stock market is going to discount the future, I think it'll look through the winter into the spring. And in the spring, some of these more value-oriented sectors have a more optimistic outlook and are definitely recovering from what should be cyclical lows in terms of earnings. And we can have the debate as to whether they're going to recover their cyclical highs in another year after they've traveled a bit more of a journey. Some people would say a quality airline is going to be recovering into an industry with fundamentally less capacity. So actually, they may have pricing power. Indeed, post the GFC, some of the better airline franchises in Europe for a period of time had pricing power before capacity was attracted back to the market. So you do have that dynamic that a short, sharp shakeout that we had this year can also shake out capacity and can give some industries some temporal pricing power. It's hard to guesstimate how far that goes. But I think we're only just emerging from these industries being extremely unloved and value being extremely unloved. So I think there's a bit more of a journey to go before we need to worry about what the top looks like. And in terms of looking through the winter of discontent, I would add we are in a multi-speed world. And so far, until literally the last few days, Asia, as one part of the emerging markets, appears to have dealt with this crisis better than some other aspects of developed markets. So they are, to a certain extent, not even facing a winter of discontent. I read the other day that Asian wage inflation is anticipated to be almost 4% this year versus the rest of the world, 1.7%. And in that respect, we'd potentially be reasonably constructive on the outlook for emerging markets as they bounce back from the coronavirus. And a second aspect from a diversification perspective would be there's various commentaries which are less optimistic on the outlook for the dollar, precisely as you alluded, Ron, because of the M2 money supply growing with the printing of stimulus. And it could well be that the emerging markets provide diversification in terms of geography and geopolitics, but also in terms of currency. So there are definitely some areas which are bright spots which are emerging, I'd say, from a spring of discontent, and the winter so far looks under control. This virus is obviously clearly very dangerous, and I wouldn't want to start to predict that they don't encounter difficulties. But I think for the medium-term horizon, there are some reasons to be optimistic about their growth. And in a Biden administration where trade wars hopefully softened, shall we say, or maybe even handled behind closed doors without the volatile headlines, that could also prove to be a very constructive environment for emerging markets and emerging market value over the next couple of years.
All right, Daniel, thanks very much. Daniel Woodbridge is Senior Portfolio Manager at the QEP team, joining us from London. That's it for today's US Lens. Thank you, everybody, for joining us, and we'll talk to you after the holidays. Enjoy them. If you